All right. Well, we'll start recording and we'll see if our boy Jim gets here when he gets here, and hope he gets here before it's too late to get here. Welcome, fans, friends, and folks that have been waiting with bated breath for the annual, I guess it's become a tradition now. It's like the third or fourth year we've done this. The annual Compass Games catalog episode of the podcast. And I was thinking the other day that it's kind of goofy that we actually spend, you know, as much time on this as we do. But then you turn around and you look at Aardwolf's show on Monday nights, his counterclipping show. Every month when the new GMT Games update comes out, he loses at least a half a show to the GMT Games update. And so if you figure he goes anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour 12 times a year, the fact that we take 2 hours and change to do the Compass catalog each year almost feels like we're kind of shortchanging them by comparison. With all that as the lead-in, we've got a bunch of guys named Mike here. Maybe that's why Jim didn't show up. He's not named Mike. BB Mike from My Own Worst Enemy is back because it's the Compass catalog and it's what we do. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. And that was a nice way to rationalize the time we spent or we're going to spend going through this catalog.
Well, that, and it's a cool catalog. Like it is an artifact of our generations, but it is still cool and totally worth doing. And then other Mike, OJ's dad. How are you, man?
I'm good.
So this is the first time you've been here this season, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's what you get for being on the road so much, man.
Yeah.
So, look, as always, you know, just the word of warning, we're going to spend the next 2-ish hours talking about the Compass Games catalog, because that's the whole, you know, pretty much this whole thing is going to be about Compass Games stuff. If you're not a fan of Compass Games, like, I don't want to tell you to turn us off, but you're probably going to want to turn us off now and, like, spare yourself the 2 hours, unless you're just a completist or, you know, enjoy bad puns or whatever, because this is what we're doing for the next couple hours. That said, there's some really cool stuff in the catalog. There's some cool stuff that Compass has been cranking out lately. A few things a little off the beaten path for them. Before we dig into the catalog, just a quick question for you guys. And I can't say Mike, you go first. BB Mike, you go first. But what's your favorite Compass Games game that you have played?
Compass Games that I have played. You're going to put me on the spot here, aren't you?
And I am. You know, if you have a favorite, you shouldn't have to think that hard about it, right?
Well, they're all good, right?
Well, okay.
That's a tough one because one thing I need to do is inventory all of my games. And I think probably the bigger parts of that game inventory are going to be Compass Games and maybe GMT. Let me look at the shelf real quick and see if anything pops out here.
While he's ogling the shelf, OJ's dad, you got a particular Compass game that stands out as a favorite or a first among equals?
No, I can't really say I do right at the moment.
See, it's a hard question, I'm telling you.
That's killing me.
Yeah. And not just Compass Games, but it's been quite a while since I've had anything on the table.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that doesn't help.
Well, going from that,
because you're part of the tabletop simulator crew.
Right. Well, yeah. But I mean, outside of that, it's just been a while since I've put anything on the table. So,
yeah.
I will say that Carrier Battle Philippine Sea was about one of the last things I think I had from Compass on the table. And that was extremely, that was a fun game. I hate to call it the best, though. You know, that's a toughie.
Yeah.
By the way, Jim said he'll bill you along in a minute if I didn't respond to you.
Fair enough.
He's still reading out that.
he said something about putting flowers, working on my flowers.
Working on flowers?
Yeah, he was posting up some pictures of some of his latest creations for TTS.
I'm afraid to ask. But
looks like some
okay.
Looks like some sharp practice maybe he's been working on.
Fair enough. I think, you know, in terms of the Compass game that I've played the most, it's also the one that I've taught the most, and it's probably the one that's hit the table the most. I don't think it's any surprise to folks that Brief Border Wars is the one that would bubble up to the top for me. A bunch of different conflicts, teaches really easy, plays quick. We've talked about it plenty of times about what a great convention game it is because there's a lot of variety in the box. And because it teaches so quickly, you can run two simultaneous games while you're doing it. And so that definitely has some advantages. I will say at Fall Assembly, we got NATO Cold War Goes Hot on the table for a couple of runs. Keith Tracton from Lock and Load, he and I were playing against Bruce Maxwell for one of them. And we only made it maybe 3 turns into the game, but they were pretty action-packed turns that stayed rather busy. And it was a lot of fun. It's obviously a lot easier to learn the game when there is somebody there to explain it to you, especially when it is somebody as good at explaining it to you as Bruce is. I really enjoyed that one and would love to get it on the table again sometime. With a group of folks to play. But I don't think it's anybody's secret that Brief Border Wars bubbles up to the top there. Welcome, Jim. How are you, man?
Ahoy and good evening.
Hey, so we were sort of doing a bit of a roundtable. Favorite Compass game that you've played? Do you have one that sticks out in mind?
Wow. As a particular favorite? See, it's not just me. Exactly. That's a very difficult question.
Man, like all times ever?
Yeah, you can't.
How about
favorite? They got a lot of good games.
Favorite recent one?
There you go.
Is there?
One I like. I man, I'm. I. Oof, there's a bunch of them out of Paper Wars that I enjoyed a ton that I thought were actually very, very well done. One of the things, it's not exactly a secret that one of the things you can do with a thing like Paper Wars as opposed to a box game is crawl around in the niches of history.
Yeah. You know, well, like the most recent Paper Wars magazine with the Wolfetone Rebellion in Ireland.
There you go. That's, by the way, one I absolutely have to get. I have not gotten it yet, but that is an absolutely fascinating conflict to me.
I have mine here. So my table right now has Habsburg Eclipse on it, the remake from Victory Point Games. Mm-hmm. I'm about four cards into the game so far. It's one of those things that, like, between conference calls, as I'm walking around the office here, you know, I'll flip a card over and I'll play like a card. But I definitely want to get Wolfetone Rebellion on the table. I will say that some of the counter art in that one is actually really cool. The mobs for the rebels, the Irish rebels, the mobs on the counter, it looks like a crowd of dudes all holding their, you know, torches and pitchforks. And it's a really cool looking little counter. I kind of want to see some masses of those on the map.
I really, really enjoyed I Will Fight No More Forever.
Okay.
It's not exactly a shock. I'm going through my shelf over here.
A remake of the early 80s one?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I know the game you're talking about. I'd have to put the it doesn't mention it if it is.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who did the original one. It wasn't one of the big three early 80s war game companies. I just can't remember who it was that did the one back in the early 80s.
I'm gonna cheat.
I guess it was 79.
This is a total, you know, I feel stupid. You're probably gonna call it a cheat. I don't care. I defend this. I deeply wish, and I think I said this last year, I deeply wish GMT would sell Commands and Colors to Compass.
Yeah.
Because Tricorn, quality wise, component wise, everything wise, is better than what GMT is putting out. And oh, they're able to release things. You know, I don't know the economics of it. I'm sure that's part of it. But both Tricorn and its expansion, Jacobite Rising, yeah, those would be my favorites. Those are great games. In fact, one of these days I have to get to Saturday Night Fights or one of the other events, something out of Tricorn, because we got a lot of the guys in the group that love the American War of Independence. And I think there may even be some Jacobite Rebellion figs out there. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, being able to size up a couple of those. So, yeah, that actually is kind of simple. That's my number one.
So I just looked it up. The I Will Fight No More Forever from Paper Wars is a remake of the 1979 Sim Canada I Will Fight No More Forever.
Is it? Okay, it is. That's cool. That's good to know.
At least according to BGG, and we all know they're never wrong.
And they got enough people that would yell at them if that were wrong. So
yeah.
Well, it's a good game anyway. Or yes, it's still a good game. I don't quite know what to say.
BB Mike, we did have Tricorn on the table back at Mace last fall, right?
Yeah, so I knew Jim was coming and I didn't want to say Tricorn because it was so obvious.
Yeah, it's a real, real hard game to play solo there. Anyway,
actually, no, it's not. It's pretty easy.
With cards? How are you playing those cards?
You can either
bipolarness.
You can either use Stupid Joe's card system, which is very, very solo friendly.
Oh, yeah, I have heard of this thing. Yeah.
There you go.
He plays out. He plays with his left eye for one side and his right eye for the other side.
There you go.
Just an FYI, Tricorn's on sale right now for $71 for the holidays.
Steal, kids! It's a steal. Go get it.
Retail price $109.
So yeah, did they reprint that? Because I thought that was out of print.
They may well have.
See, this is one of those things where I kind of lose track. It's sort of like whenever we get that Matrix games, the computer company, you know, Matrix or Slytherin sends us, you've been a loyal customer for 20 years. Here's your coupon. And then you go to their website and you realize you have everything because you bought it when it was first released.
Yeah, that's me.
It's kind of the same thing here. It's like, I don't. Oh yeah, it is on sale. There it is. I don't.
For anyone who's interested in I Will Fight No More Forever, the Retreat of the Nez Perce Indian Tribe, it's on sale for $25 right now. So we'll try to mention the sale prices as we mention the games. And I will give Compass credit for this. When they put stuff on sale, it's actually on sale. As we are recording this, there's one of the links in Tuesday Newsday was for the most recent release from Grognard Sims. So stepping away from Compass Games for half a second, Grognard Sims just released the latest game in their Armored Knights series, Guderian Crossing the Muse. And there was a little bit of confusion between the email versus what the Grognard Sims website says as to what the actual price is. Whether it's full price, or whether you could still get it on the pre-order price. Well, if you flip over to Noble Knight, the price over at Noble Knight it's based on the retail price. And hang on, I want to make sure I get the numbers absolutely correct here, because I don't want to be saying that something's not the sale price properly quoted here. So give me half a second. It is Armored Knights Guderian Crosses the Muse. The MSRP is $110. It's a pretty complex game. Grognard Sims tends to put a ton of shit in their box. So $110 is not out of bounds for what you would expect from something like Grognard Sims. They're well-packed boxes. If you hustle over to Noble Knight, you can get it on sale for the low, low price of $109.95.
Well,
it is technically on sale. I'm putting air quotes around the word sale. You can save a nickel if you go to Noble Knight Games and get it from them instead of direct from the manufacturer.
There you have it.
Just in case you were looking for a bargain out there, you know, while you're doing your Christmas shopping. So that's a long way around to point out that when Compass puts stuff on sale in their catalog, shit's actually on sale, right?
There we go. I was waiting for to quote the Marx Brothers, but if you arrive at a point, please feel free to stop.
Yes, was the point. Shit's actually on sale in the Compass catalog.
And it's on sale till the end of January.
Yes. Yes, so, that's another cool thing Compass does.
So from now, you know, from basically whenever they put out the catalog until the end of January, so you're talking 3.5 to 4 months of sale prices here.
Yeah.
With some things up to 70% off.
What's cool about them extending it past Christmas is that any money you get for Christmas, you can use towards your game purchases and still get them on sale.
Exactly.
Whatever's left in stock, that is, of course.
Well,
that's...
But you're rolling those dice at any time, right?
I see what you did there.
Ah...
The 11th season of the Armchair Dragoons podcast, mentioned in dispatches, is graciously supported by all of our Patreon supporters who pledged at the top level. A huge thank you to Chet Bell, Hellcat6, Patrick Geraghty, Fred Stogg and his walking companion, Mike Quigley, Joseph Knorr, Trep Corey, Stagger Wing, Mark Talk, and Kevin Bertram for their support of the Armchair Dragoons, which helps us bring you the best strategy gaming content on the web. You too can sign up as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Okay, so we crack open the Compass catalog as we are opening from completely closed. They're promoting the heck out of Burning Banners, which is kind of neat. You know, this is a new thing for Compass. Burning Banners is a full-on fantasy war game, which is a cool thing. The other big change for Compass with Burning Banners was normally when Compass throws something up on Kickstarter, like that game's already in their warehouse. It's just a way for them to get a bunch of last-minute pre-orders through a different sales channel. And look, I'm guilty of jumping on a couple of them. That's how I got my NATO Cold War Goes Hot. So I'm totally guilty of being a part of that machine that jumps on that jumps on that from Compass. I think that's what I also did for my Third World War box. The remake of the four old GDW games. I got mine through their Kickstarter pre-order as well. Burning Banners was a legit crowdfunding campaign. That was not something they were going to send to press if it didn't meet its funding goal through Kickstarter. Based on what Bill had said on on one of the live shows. I don't remember if it was a Compass show or if it was the time that he was on with Gary and Dan, but that was a legit actual Kickstarter, not just trying to gin up some pre-orders. So that was kind of cool. And then also the Compass Games expos for both the Fall Expo in 2023 and the Spring Expo in 2024 and the Fall Expo in 2024. All those dates are all on the catalog as well. So look for all those to show up on our event calendar on our site. As we open it up, there's the Paper Wars inventory. We'll circle back around to those guys. And then there are parts of the other categories like the World War II, the Cold War category, whatever. And so as you unfold it, you get the big list of here's all the stuff we've still got in stock between all the different categories. And these are just the linear listings, right? It's the title of the game, like a one sentence description and a bunch of crazy sale prices. As we're eyeballing this far of unfolding the catalog before we get to the cool, really, you know, big blocks of text on the inside.
Okay. So I'm trying to understand what you're pointing me at, because obviously we can't see each other.
Yeah. I'm with Jim on that one. Is it the back you're looking at, the very back page?
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm like still in stock for you guys to see.
Still in stock, Paper Wars.
Yeah. It's just the whole listing of games by category.
Like all the linear listings of games.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. This list, this is the example of the problem I was raising. Everything I want on this list, I've got. I promise you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not to say there aren't some great games in here or some very good games. Like, for example, I see, you know, Napoleon's Eagles, a nice card game, great fun. If that's what you like, you should go out and get it. They are... where was the other one that I saw? And it's actually not Napoleonic. I was just scrolling down here through here. There was one other one.
Well, while you're looking, I will jump in with one that I may jump on is the second edition of The Lamps Are Going Out is on a holiday price for $52. I might have to throw my $52 at that one. I've been looking at that one for quite a while, back to when it originally came out. And I never quite grabbed it, and I needed to, and now I probably will. So
the and there they are. Jacobite Rising has a nice holiday price. Tricorn has a nice holiday price. Again, I have those things. There, Napoleon's Imperium is there, and it in fact is blowout priced because it doesn't come with the super sweet gigantic table.
If that were the case, you could add another zero or two onto the price.
I think so, and a whole bunch of extra work to paint the thing. So they've got a lot of very cool. Oh, there it is. Brief Border Wars. Get it, folks. Get Brief Border Wars. You won't be sad.
Already got it.
I may look at the No Peace Without Honor and Without Spain.
Oh yeah, the good series. Good series. Don't have
got,
it, but
I've got the 9-Year War, but I don't have those other two. So they've got those two in stock for $50 each. I may look at grabbing those.
That may be what you go for, huh? BB Mike, anything on here you don't already have that you need to go grab?
It's, you know, the one on Fatal Alliances. I've looked at that one before, but, you know, the holiday price of $94, that's still...
That doesn't feel very holiday to you?
Doesn't feel very merry to me, if you know what I mean.
it is $40 off retail. It's not a non-trivial discount. It's just already expensive.
And then the ones I'm looking at that are blowout priced or very, very low price or Late Unpleasantness is only $35, which is tempting. And I'll mention that I do not own a copy of Brief Border Wars. So that also looks tempting.
I own my Brief Border Wars copy that has been played at many, many conventions. And then I also have Brief Border Wars 2 already on pre-order over it. That one I pre-ordered through Gamers Armory rather than through Compass directly, because again, want to help support the local store. So I make sure to get a couple of them through the store as well. The Lamps Are Going Out is one that I was eyeballing. On one hand, I'm not sure that I necessarily want the Conquistadors, because of, you know, the way they approach some of the subject matter. But on the other hand, it is essentially a giant hex crawl. And that's something that I always enjoyed doing, playing, you know, adventure games growing up, that the hex crawl kind of stuff was something that I enjoyed. And I'm just debating whether or not I want to take the plunge on that. We'll have to see.
So when you say hex crawl, you're talking about something like Source of the Nile?
Yeah, something more like that. Something that's more hybrid adventure type game that leans heavily into the explorer part of the 4X equation. So
in which game was that?
The Conquistadors.
Conquistadors, thank you.
Yeah, where you're sort of, you know, you're exploring the Americas as a Spanish conquistador trying to, you know, find and plunder what's there. And that sort of hex crawl explore mechanic was something that, that I always enjoyed playing a lot growing up. Maybe take a plunge on that one. I don't know. So I think more of the things that I want are on the inside of this whole thing. So maybe we flip it all over and we start working our way through
Can we read tea leaves though? Can we just briefly read tea leaves?
Okay, briefly read tea leaves.
If something is a blowout price, what do we think about that game?
That it may not be coming back.
Is that the only thing you would interpret it to mean?
They need space in the warehouse.
Uh-huh. And yet some other games that are older than they and are bigger than they are not on blowout pricing. I mean, to me, blowout pricing says they just didn't sell.
Yeah, that could be.
The example I'm going to give here is Coalition.
Okay.
Which did go through a Kickstarter, I'm pretty sure. Because I think I looked at it and I decided.
Well, I mean, many of them do because they use that as sort of.
Right, you're right about that. Yeah. So I'm just checking because I am fascinated by the fact that their fantasy did so very well.
Yeah.
You know, that they did so well. And I'm equally interested at the ones that don't do well or that wind up on a blowout and what it says about the market and where that is. Related thereunto, I guess, the one thing I will say, just reviewing the Kickstarter, which I was doing of Burning Banners because it was really the only one I hadn't heard of prior to coming on the show, it is interesting how deeply or how far they're reaching to try to get the hobby gamer market here.
Yeah. Well,
because it's got not, this thing is not being reviewed by.
Mo did an extended video series on it. He did 3 or 4 episodes on it, you know, sort of a learn to play and a strategy guide kind of thing. And
not appearing on the Kickstarter page.
Yeah. I know Mo did quite a bit of coverage on it.
What is appearing on the Kickstarter page is the Dice Tower.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is a broader appeal than just some of those nitty gritty, you know, high fidelity, high detail war games that a lot of us know and love. So it does have a little broader appeal than that. But, you know, as mentioned earlier, this is the first one that Compass went into the Kickstarter needing to raise the money to go to press. Not like they probably had the money to send it to press, right? But they weren't going to send it to press unless it passed a certain funding goal, unlike your normal Compass Kickstarters, where Bill puts it on Kickstarter 3 weeks before he's ready to ship just to get additional pre-orders for something that's already in the warehouse. Yeah.
And a video from a place called Quackalope.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Quackalope would be an entire separate podcast episode unto itself, given that they were caught shaking down publishers for additional money for positive reviews.
Ah, well, there it is. So my point being, I just think it's interesting as we now dive into the catalog that I am fascinated to watch the major players in our hobby whore themselves after the hobby market. And yes, I call it that. I find it annoying, but that's okay. They want to make money I don't care that they make money. I want them to make games for which I will pay them. They want to make money. So insofar as that is true, I suspect our interests do conflict slightly.
Well, that may be, but two things. One, this isn't the first time Compass has chased a non-war game audience somewhere, because Cargo Express was around, Colonialism was around,
the footprint. I was looking at Colonialism, I was looking at Cargo Express. Look at the footprint of those.
Oh, you know, they're not significant things. But here's the other thing though. Just on a pure headcount of titles, even if you removed everything in there that is blowout price, and so you're reading the tea leaves that those are likely to be discontinued and dropped from the catalog in the future, you've got Burning Banners, and if you want to be generous, we add Cargo Express and Colonialism to it. That's 3 out of how many games here? Like, what's your ratio of non-war game to war game? And
0.
Are you that
zero? Concerned? I will call them out when that number isn't 0. Question asked and answered.
Fair enough. Back to OSG with you.
Yes. In Zuckerland, there are no such things.
Before we run to the inside, I will note that this is 2 years in a row in which the title of the game in Paper Wars 93 was correctly spelled, and it is no longer Ragam. It is, in fact, still Vagram. So that is good. All right. Are we good to head to the inside of the the page here?
I'm ready.
All right. So, you know, look, we've got the catalog info up there in the top left, and it is nice that they do explain to you how some of the color coding applies to the prices. So they have holiday pricing, blowout pricing, special pricing, and pre-order pricing. Again, there are variations on the theme. Each of those involves a different percentage that things are on sale. Jim's prediction is that the blowout ones are likely to be going away because they probably didn't sell and just taking up space in the warehouse. It'll be interesting to maybe compare to the catalog in a year or two how many of the things on blowout now are gone in the future. So that'll be interesting to take a look and see. And then how many of the pre-orders actually finally come into land? How many of those we actually, you know, get in our hand? All right, with all of that, it is interesting that we are largely alphabetical because we started 1812, 2040, Aaron Armor, Alexandros and Sparta. And so we start working our way through, and then right smack in the middle of the page is Rebel Tide, crammed in between Battle Hymn and Bismarck. So we are alphabetical-ish, I guess is the way to describe this. BB Mike, on this first page of the big box part of the catalog, what if anything is jumping off the page at you?
Well, immediately Battle Hymn Volume 2, because Battle Hymn, the first volume, was so good. So that, and then right next to that is Rebel Tide, which I'm also looking forward to. And I'm also looking forward to Burning Banners. I think I've pre-ordered it, and I think it's going to be a good game. I hope it's going to be a good game. And Burma sitting next to that. So those are the four that I'm looking at on this page that I'm looking forward to.
The ones jumping off the page at you. All right. OJ's dad, Mike, what do you got? Anything on here just jumping off the page at you that's causing you to drool a little on the paper?
Possibly Aaron Armor.
Yeah. I am very interested to see Aaron Armor myself for two reasons. One, I loved the original game. Still have it on my shelf. Two, we are planning on having that one with us at Origins next year. So yep. That is definitely one I'm looking forward to seeing. And Fred Schwartz, who is the developer, was at Origins this year gaming with us. He has committed to coming back next year as a GM, running a bunch of Aaron Armor games. And based on a discussion we had at Fall Assembly, right now Bruce is planning on joining Fred at Origins next summer. So we'll have the both of them running a table that will primarily be Aaron Armor, but with Bruce there, we'll probably mix in some of NATO Cold War Goes Hot also. So
the other one that I may be looking at is Blue Water Navy, but that's not until 2025.
So you're talking Blue Water Navy, the Pacific, right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. That's the only one that's on this page.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I saw where the Pacific was and I had to go, you know, wrap around to the next line to make sure that the original Blue Water Navy wasn't there. Is that one back on the previous page? Is that,
I don't think so,
available in the hypothetical?
No, category? I don't think it is.
So that one may be out of print at the moment. Okay. Well, that'll be interesting. I know the original one was very well regarded by a lot of people, but you're right. I mean, that could be a wild.
It looks like it's available on their website though.
The original Blue Water Navy?
Yeah, $99.
Well, given that this whole thing is alphabetical-ish, it is possible it is inside somewhere, and we just haven't gotten
it yet. It did allow me to add the original to the cart. I just looked it up online.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's amazing. All this stuff is available online, and here we are unfolding a giant paper catalog to see what we got, because it's a paper catalog. It's cool. All right, Jim, anything on this page jumping off at you? Something in there that's making
I am profoundly amused that, to their great credit, they label Burning Banners in big letters fantasy game. I give them immense credit for that. Thank you. Obvious answer. I don't think for me anything comes even close. And I am deeply disturbed. Well, Brent, you mentioned it. Brief Border Wars 2.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely looking forward to that one. I will tell you, based on the those of you listening to the podcast can just back up a couple of episodes and go listen to the one that I did with Justin Fasino about his design of Seljuk, his entry in the Levian campaign series. At the start of the podcast, we were talking about some of the things we were playing lately, and he had a lot of very positive things to say about 1812 War on the Great Lakes Frontier. Enough that I had to like close my web browser before I ordered it by the end of the podcast. So it is it is not unlikely that I could find myself ordering that one as well. So there's a couple in here. Again, Brief Border Wars 2 I already have on pre-order over at Gamers Armory. 1812 and Aaron Armor are the other two on here that are kind of jumping out at me. Blue Water Navy, the Pacific, and Breaking the Chains are both things that I would be interested to play someone else's copy. They're ones I would like to play, but I'm not sure I would spend the money on them, given that the naval stuff isn't really my thing. So. Anybody got any comments on other? I mean, look, one of the reasons this episode always takes us 3 hours to record is we go through literally box by box through the whole thing rather than do that end to end. Just quickly, kind of by exception, does anybody have comments at the top end of the page? 1812, 2040, Aaron Armor, Alexandros and Spartacus, American Tank Ace, Atlantic Sentinels. Anything in there anybody wants to volunteer about any of those topics?
Just one quick thing to say, just to get Jim riled up even more, because he pointed out Fantasy Game. If you look, they're also calling out Solitaire High, and they're also calling out, I think this is new this year, where they're actually calling out games that have bot systems and games that contain designs or rules, I guess what they're talking about, designed specifically for solitaire play.
Well, that was on the next page, so I figured we hit that then.
Well, there's wasted energy on this page too.
That's what I was going to point out is the block that's pointing out the blowout sale games. That you know, normally right you would see a game, an actual game there, and not a list of the sale stuff.
Yeah,
but that was interesting.
Yeah, maybe just want to make sure that catches your eye if you missed it in the linear listings on the previous pages that we were looking at. So,
you know, and just to more genteelly comment on Mike and my profound disagreement about the nature of solitaire games, it's clear that I'm wildly out of sync, because he's right. When you read through this catalog, it is evident that they see and are seeking to serve a demand for solitaire games. It, as I've said many times, it is utterly puzzling to me. It makes no sense. I think a solitaire war game is very near an oxymoron, but boy, oh boy, they must, and they're, again, their business, they're smart. They see it there. And I'll say this year what I said last year. I see a game like Bismarck, I'm immediately interested. And then I see again at solitaire, even though it's still not out. It wasn't out last year. It's not out now. I see it and I go, oh, what a waste.
Yeah.
I think
they did call out Solitaire High or Design for Solitaire last year. I think you're correct in noting that the making an emphasis of the bot system is that might be new this year. And I'm too lazy to walk across my office and go find last year's catalog to compare. So, but that is a good catch that they are making a bigger deal out of solitaire and I don't recall them noting the bot system last year. So that's a good catch. Out of that top block of six at the top of there, one thing I do want to bring up. So Alexandros and Spartacus, designed by Mike Markowitz. I happen to know Mike. Mike's a good dude. He's a longtime professional war gamer, lives up in the DC area, frequent speaker at Connections, really fun dude to hang out and have a beer with after hours at Connections or something like that. Cause some of the war stories he has are hilarious. Alexandros and Spartacus originally appeared in an issue of Command magazine years ago. So 30, 35 years ago, as I understand it, I only found this out in the last week or so. It looks like Compass has the rights to the games from the old Command magazines now. That they've managed to secure, if not all, then the majority of them. And so we should start seeing Compass Games remakes of more and more games out of the old Command magazines.
Hugama, Rock of Waterloo.
And, huh?
I'm just putting it out into the ether that I want the first one to be Hugama, Rock of Waterloo.
Well, it'll have to, it won't be the first, because Alexandros and Spartacus are the first two.
Oh, is that all, was that out of that deal?
Those are, well, I don't know if they're out of that deal, but they are both from Command magazines.
Yeah, I thought that game was out last year, or it was on this catalog last year.
I think it was in the catalog last year, but not yet released. I think it was one of those still on pre-order, but it was in the catalog last year. So hey, maybe you'll get your Hugamon game out of all of this, because you know the Waterloo market is a very underserved market that is totally lacking in deep analyses of that battle.
Agree.
All right, as we work our way through the rest of this page, Barbarians of the Gates, Battle Hymn Volume 2, Rebel Tide, which not alphabetical, but who cares? It's still there. Bismarck, Blue Water Navy, Pacific, Breaking the Chains 2.0, Brief Border Wars 2, British Tank Ace, Operation 333. Any of those, BB Mike, any of those really jumping out? You mentioned Battle Hymn 2 and Rebel Tide earlier. Anything else jumping off the page at you?
No, I think just those two. I think I mentioned Burma, but I'm not really sold on Burma, so I don't know. Yeah, just those two really. Battle Hymn Volume 2 and Rebel Tide.
Yeah, I hadn't got down to those last two rows yet, so we'll get back around to Burma here in a minute. For Rebel Tide, you do have your Solitaire bot system in that. Interestingly, that the block for Rebel Tide, the Solitaire High and bot system lines are not in red ink like they are everywhere else. But the between that Battle Hymn Volume 2, is it the designers? Is it just the topic? Is it, you know, previous experience with the system? What is it about those that's grabbing you?
So for Battle Hymn Volume 2, it is definitely the designer, and having played Battle Hymn, you know, the first game was so much fun. Now, one thing that does worry me, and it does say in red down there, Solitaire designed for solitaire play. And, you know, you've heard me say it a million times before. I don't know why it really says that unless they are going to include rules for solitaire only. I prefer games that are not solitaire only. So that kind of makes me nervous. I'm pretty sure that it says players 1 to 2, best with 2. So yeah, I'm hoping that's true.
I was about to point that out, that it says players 1 to 2.
I know it says that, but then
2 and the very next line.
Right. And I'm looking at that going, wait, what? So maybe there's another like a solitaire rule book in there. And I think more and more you're seeing that too. So I hope that's what that is.
Yeah, I think Jim is weeping into his cognac right now at the contradictions there on Battle Hymn Volume 2. So
yeah. And with Rebel Tide, it's more just the subject matter. It's Civil War. It's strategic Civil War. I played Pacific Tide, and it's a pretty good, you know, very high level strategic Pacific game. So I'm hoping they do the same sort of thing with the Civil War here.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. One thing that's not immediately obvious from this specific catalog listing, but I do happen to know the other games there, but Brief Border Wars 2 is a bit of a departure from what the original one did, because they're not all more contemporary post-Cold War conflicts. A couple of these take place between World War I and II, and some of them actually do take place in World War II, because Khalkhin Gol is one of the battles that's in Brief Border Wars 2. So these are four battles that are of a different era than the original Quad. There's a couple of them that take place in the Balkans. And then there's Teschen, which is the 7-day war. And then Nomanhan, which is war on a distant plain. So that's the Khalkhin Gol game. So these are not contemporary ones the way Brief Border Wars the original was, which was were pretty much all in the 70s, or in the case of the they were all in the 70s except for the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. So
is it safe to assume, I'm assuming it is, that this is a standalone game? You don't need the first one to play it?
These are all standalone. All four of those can be played individually, but yes, they are all standalone. So you do not need the original one to play Brief Border Wars 2. So all right, the last two rows on this one, BB Mike, we mentioned Burma, Burning Banners, Carrier Battle, Philippine Sea, which you've been a fan of for quite some time, Combat Volumes 1 and 2, and now there's Volume 3 coming in the middle of next year, Death in the Trenches, Desert Blitzkrieg, Desert Generals, and Dog Boats. Jim, over to you. Any of those... We mentioned Burning Banners. We know what you think of that one, but any of the other games, not many of those are usually in your wheelhouse, but something jumping out at you there?
I want to be clear. I mean, you're making me go back in. I was already in the other page. I mean, first of all, you've cited what? 1, 2, 3.
8, 10 games there ish.
No. I'm counting how many solitaire games. 4. So why would you ask? number two, just because I'm not interested in Burning Banners doesn't mean I don't think it'll turn out to be a great game. It's just not my particular thing. Basically, I think the evolution of that form stopped with Divine Right. Nothing for me.
Not a Wizard Kings fan, are you?
No, I'm not. I it's fine. I've played a lot. I have a lot. Just because I own a lot of his stuff, and I love Columbia Games generally. But it's pretty much, like I say, yes, Lord of the Rings, the Ares game is great, but pretty much stopped with Divine Right as far as evolving that form. I'm also, one of these days, I do want to read more about fantasy games without their own IP. Same thing with sci-fi. I think it's a fascinating exercise.
Which came first, Magic Realm or Divine Right?
That I would have to look up as someone who owns both. Although, let it be clear, those are two wildly different games.
Yes, but you're a fan of both.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So there are many who would argue that Magic Realm is, in fact, a fantasy war game. And
oh, it indubitably is.
So,
okay, so Magic Realm, they are both 1979.
Okay.
A very fine year.
Fair enough. All right. Anybody got anything else they want to bring up on that specific page to kind of discuss? OJ's dad, I don't think we circled back around to you for those bottom two rows. What do you got?
Nothing right now.
Okay. Wasn't sure. So one thing I will note, just in terms of the labeling of the products, Combat Volume 1 is a second printing, and they give you information about, hey, this is a solitaire game designed for solitaire play. It's man-to-man combat in World War II. Combat Volume 2 notes in large, bold print, you must have combat to play this expansion. Combat Volume 3 does not say either way whether or not you specifically have to have Combat Volume 1 or 2 in order to use 3, or if it's a standalone. It may say on the website, but it does not specify in the catalog one way or the other. It just says this is the third game in the series of combat games that use the same system, but it doesn't say that you have to have one of the other previous ones to be able to play that one. Okay, we're just going to start sort of on the big spread in the middle. So those of you following along at home, we have the catalog completely unfolded at this point. And so we're on the centerfold here, right? The large and glorious main, colorful, almost patchwork quilt layout version of this thing. It is interesting that the graphic design has slightly improved, in that instead of just large color blocks, we've actually got some light background mapping behind some of the games in there. Those that have some more details, some artwork already developed for them, we've got those as a part of the layout, which is kind of cool. Gives a little better visual interest to the overall product here. Going over to the left side, we're still alphabetical-ish. So we've got the just that page in general. OJ's dad, something jumping out at you here on the left side of this big spread inside here?
Let's see. We're talking just the first two rows?
You can go ahead and hit anything off the page.
Ah, okay.
What's jumping out at you?
The fact that they took up the space of three game blocks to advertise solo games.
Again, you're
thank you, OJ.
It's not the topic that they did. It's the fact that they didn't have games to put in there. If you look at that, there's three blocks here, and on the other page there was one. There's four blocks worth of games that they've used for other things.
Yeah,
I find that interesting.
That is a good point.
No peace, 30 years war.
Okay,
there we go. Ding, ding.
let's see. What else do we have here? I'm looking.
Jim, BB Mike, we're going to get back to you on the same question. So as OJ's dad's ogling through this, be thinking about what's jumping off the page for you.
Flanks of Gettysburg may be interesting.
Yeah.
Just because it concentrates on the two flanks, right? And you're not trying to fight the whole battle, three-day battle and everything. You just maybe be more focused on
some specific
on those
actions.
Engagements.
Yeah. That could well be. So it's sort of let's ignore Pickett's charge and worry about all the rest of the battle. So,
well, especially like Culp's Hill, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the least of the talked about areas of that battle.
Yeah, I could totally see that. So, BB Mike, what on here might be jumping off the page at you?
The things on this page, I'd have to say, Grant moves south. That looks interesting. Again, it's Civil War, so why wouldn't it? possibly Galaxy Force.
Okay.
I think maybe maybe Kaiser Fleet. Now, that one's by Gilbert Collins, so the designer there kind of stands out to me. So possibly Kaiser Fleet.
Okay.
And then, you know, it's going to make Jim twist his hair again, but Golden Age of Piracy, I don't know anything about that.
For the love of God.
Almost the first time, but who doesn't love a good pirate game? Seriously.
Me.
Specifically, he doesn't like the pirate side of it. Sailing ships, he loves.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants them to be a little more structured and regimented and organized, and prefers rum, sodomy, and the lash.
Like I said, I don't know anything about this game, but hey, it's a pirate game, and it's down to the individual ship level. So, you know,
it's also part adventure and part RPG.
I'm an RPG guy again, because like Burning Banners, you want to make money, appeal to the people that like all this stuff, not just one little niche.
Yeah,
but we had this game. It was called Sid Meier's Pirates. We had this game.
Great game, but it wasn't.
Go play that game.
It wasn't a board game. It was a digital.
Go play that game. It's better. Trust me.
We had an Avalon Hill Blackbeard. We got a GMT Blackbeard, and there's going to be a forthcoming Fort Circle Blackbeard.
You want me to go through the list of dumb things humanity does?
No, we'd be here all.
Yeah. Okay. So
somebody's got to edit this together, Jim.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that, well, we've got many things like this, therefore they're wise, prudent, good. No, that's not true. We do all sorts. You know, how many types of Skims has Kim Kardashian released? We didn't need the first one. The fact that there's 12 doesn't make them logical or good. I don't need another there was one Golden Age of Piracy game. Sid Meier designed it. It's still playable and available. Go find it, and it's a great time. You're done here.
So see, now you've got a whole other podcast topic. How many Napoleonic war games do we need?
You
can call it Old Man Yells at Clouds.
For the website that my first question I ask anyone who releases a set of Napoleonic miniatures rules, why do I need your rules? And I want you to know that I'm taking full credit for the fact that I have now read 3 rule sets that actually begin with a paragraph. Why are these rules written?
That's kind of awesome. 2, I'll note that you don't ask that same question of everybody releasing a Waterloo game.
Sorry? That line was breaking up.
Yeah. So perhaps when all of the Waterloo games lead off with the paragraph of this is why my Waterloo game matters.
Just for the record, the great Professor Charles Esdale, author of several books on Napoleon, has actually written a book on the subject of wargaming Waterloo. There's enough Waterloo war games for him to have written an entire book about it.
And probably missed a few.
Yeah, no doubt he did. I made that comment to him when I read his book.
Or intentionally ignored a few, one or the other. Okay, so Jim, besides Napoleon's Eagles 2, what is jumping off the page at you here?
Well, no, Pete, wait a minute. I get to say that. People should go check out Napoleon's Eagles 2. It's a fun game. Mike hit it. OJ hit it, I think. Square dead on the head. No peace, 30 years war. Sign up now. Go get you some. It's a great system. And I think, to me, from an interest level, they've now, I liked the others, but they've found the conflict I'm interested in. This is a very, very sweet spot for me. Easy sell. I am deeply amused by the representation in Jutland, which I may have to get, actually, but because it's not a solo game. Look at that.
Yeah,
but I'm deeply amused by their statement. It is the ultimate battleship simulation. The ultimate. There can be no others. That's a bit much, people. That is a bit much. I am nonetheless still interested. I will be reading some reviews and checking that one out. And I did have one more that I was so wrapped up by the calumny heaped upon my Napoleonic Wars that I was utterly distracted. But where did it go? I think OJ's point about Pontiac's War. A very interesting topic to me. My son is currently taking advanced placement U.S. history, and he's going through a lot of these things and reminding me of why I find it such an interesting and insufficiently covered part of American history. So big, big points to them for that. But I do think it's interesting, as Mike pointed out, and for those not looking at this thing as we are, you know, they took a big chunk of space to not publish game, to not advertise a game, and then at the bottom to advertise their expos. So I kind of wonder what that says.
Yeah, well, I've got a thought on that. It kind of goes back to like the Burning Banners, you know, and these publishers doing some non-war games. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a bit of saturation in the market.
Yep, I think coupled
with some of the economic factors that exist for some folks. Mm-hmm.
I'll be the one to go ahead and poke Jim just a little bit further and point out that the designer of his belovedly anticipated Napoleon's Eagles 2 is the same guy that designed Burning Banners.
Yeah, I wasn't going to point that out, Brant. Let that go.
Yeah, I noticed. If he chooses to slum, that's his choice.
I know, everybody's got to pay the rent and, have to slum it in the 100 days battle, mandatory Waterloo sort of game in order to pay for the cool things they really want to go do, like Burning Banners.
But yeah. See, this is another podcast we had, though. I mean, maybe the people that buy Burning Banners will go, well, what else is this gentleman designed? Oh, Napoleon's Eagles 2. What is that? Let me go check that out.
That is the most absurd. Are you kidding? I'm sitting here moving orcs and elves around. What else? Ooh, Napoleon. What?
Are you saying they're not curious enough to go check out the designer and see what his history is?
I'm already. Well, I probably already alienated anybody in hobby gaming enough. They already think what they do with me. So I don't know how much worse I can do. But I'll suffice to say, yeah, I actually do think that. Please do go on. You do remember Tom Vassell's review of A Brave Little Belgium, don't you?
I think you might. Ouch! Ouch!
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I think many people would prefer to forget Tom's review of Brave Little Belgium if they could.
I'm sure Tom Vassell would like us to forget it.
I have zero doubt.
Yes, he never gets that. Not one day.
Yeah.
I'm also going to piggyback on what Jim said too. I think Pontiacs were. Yeah, add that to my list too. That's another really interesting topic.
Yeah. I would be interested to see, particularly as a potential convention game, Europe in Turmoil and Europe in Turmoil 2, particularly if you can connect them. And I'm also very curious to maybe ask folks who are backers of one or the other why you would only pick one and not the other. Because it seems to me that if it is an era in which you are keenly interested, why you wouldn't go ahead and grab both, given the relative lack of coverage in wargaming as a whole of that interwar era there. Why wouldn't you go ahead and grab both? And if you're only grabbing one or the other, why did you grab that one and not the other? And in particular, if you grab two without buying one, what's wrong with you, right? There's just the mind boggles. So I'm greatly curious about these things. So that is one that definitely makes me wonder. I would be interested to see Galaxy Force, not so much because I'm interested in playing it, but going back to Jim's earlier point of fantasy and sci-fi games that aren't tied to an existing IP, sort of what do you come up with? How do you build that? How do you make that? How does all that come about? And so I would definitely be interested in sort of hearing how that happens. What is it?
No, I think that's an absolutely fascinating topic because I got into this with one of the guys on that plays on Just Joe, who plays on Saturday Night Fights and others. And he said he's fine with it. And I said, I realized I'm not. I have a real problem connecting with a fantasy or sci-fi game that doesn't have an IP. The last one I think I did was Divine Right.
Yeah. Well, been a while.
Yeah. 1979.
Going further through this, I had to go back and look because I was curious. Contact Now Red Eclipse. When it was originally Contact, before it had the Red Eclipse appended to it, when it was just Contact Now, which is Steve Overton's long-awaited upgrade of Fireteam, the old West End Games Fireteam game and the changes to it. I had to go look. Jim, do you want to take a guess as to when we originally interviewed Steve Overton about Contact Now? It was, it was at a previous home on a previous podcast.
2019.
Oh, no. Keep going. Keep in mind, the mention in Dispatch has been around since 2018. So it's
true.
It's more than 5 years ago.
Wow. 2015.
It was February of 2016.
Wow.
That we asked him about Contact Now, that we first started talking about, or we're first interviewing him and we've got all this development done. Everything's, pretty much ready to go. We're in final playtesting. That's 7 years of final playtesting. And it's saying late 2024. Interestingly enough, in I think it was two issues ago in Paper Wars, I'm too lazy to go across the room and go pull the issues out and thumb through them. There were actually some Contact Now scenarios and expansion counters in Paper Wars magazines this year. And we still don't have the game.
Right. Like, yeah. No. Yeah.
Come on, guys. We've been waiting for this forever. Where is it? And look, man, it's Cold War goes hot, ground tactical. Like, this is my shtick. This is right in my wheelhouse. Where's the damn game I want to play? So, you know, going through here, other things that jump off the page at me, NATO Next War in Europe, that Cold War goes hot game. Again, I was just playing this with Bruce last weekend or a week and a half ago now. And I'll tell you, it is a ton of fun. There is a lot to it. There's a lot of chrome on this system, but it is chrome for all the right reasons. And it makes sense the way in which you can allocate the things that you do. It makes sense in the way in which the command and control works and allows you to have points of emphasis in the battle in certain places while kind of holding your breath in others and hoping for the best. And it was a blast to play, even though there's a lot for each side to do on their discrete turns. There's a lot you have to pay attention to as the other guy's going. It is definitely a fun game. Absolutely recommend folks get their teeth into it if it's at all a topic of interest to you. Slightly greater detail, working from top to bottom. Those top two rows, we've got a pair of enemy actions. I've never seen anything as to whether or not Butterfield's working on a third enemy action game, and if so, where it would take place. I don't know if any of you guys have heard word of him developing one, a third one somewhere. I've not looked, so... But across those top two rows, you know, again, BB Mike, start with you. Anything in those top two rows that you particularly want to take a moment and linger on at all?
The top two, the only one really, Grant Moves South is the biggest one in there.
Well, I mean, as one that you're interested in buying, was there something else in there that, you know, nothing else in there that catches your eye for any particular reason?
Well, I mean, the Gettysburg game, but it goes back to what Jim said. Do we need another Gettysburg game? And of course, the answer is yes, we do.
OJ's dad, anything else across those top two rows catch your eye of particular interest? Not necessarily going to run out and get it, but something that you're like, oh, that's kind of weird, you know.
Europe in Turmoil.
Yeah.
Galaxy Force, possibly.
Yeah. So, Jim, anything catching your eye as to...
I just find quad games interesting conceptually. I've been fascinated by them since my youth and detergent boxes. So Eastern Front Operational Battle Squad, I will certainly check out the rules. I promise you that.
You know, brief Border Wars has been enough of a hit that they've got a sequel coming. They've got the Eastern Front Operational Battle Squad, which it's East Front, right? So it's going to sell out in like, you know, 68 minutes. It's interesting that there aren't more quads in here somewhere. So... One that jumps out to me is for Motherland, the Russian Front 41-44, Masahiro Yamazaki. We've got a Japanese designer that we don't see a lot. We know they're there because we see folks posting pictures on social media of war games over in the Far East that, you know, if you can find an English translation for any of them, they can be challenging to do so. Here we have Compass going out to the Far East and grabbing a Japanese designer for a World War II topic. And that's kind of cool. I think that's interesting. So look, it's East Front World War II. I'm probably not the key customer there. I just find it interesting that we've got a Japanese designer being published there. That next two rows there, Last Gamble, Interceptor Ace 2, Imperial Tide, Kaiser Fleet, Jutland, Contact Now, Lightning Strikes. What we got? Manassas Designer Signature Edition, Nope, 30 years, and we've talked Napoleon's Eagles enough. Jim, anything interesting that you see in those, you know, any interesting notes or thoughts or whatever?
Oh, I mean, you know, hey guys, check it out. Another Battle of the Bulge game. Best thing ever. No, I am... Your statements about Contact Now, I agree with completely. I think it's unfortunate that it's been lagging this way, because I think it is an interesting idea, although I have officially declared myself divorced from any future World War II tactical board games. I find them superfluous.
You know, that's a World War III tactical.
Yeah, it is. Okay. It is. But I'm just, no, that's what I'm saying. I believe this is, I'm allowed to do this because I'm divorced from all World War II games.
I understand. I got you.
However, as said, most definitely no peace, and definitely interested in. We didn't get down there yet. Sorry, but yeah,
that we'll get there. We'll get there. So, OJ's dad, BB Mike, something jumping out at either of you guys across there?
Yeah, four of them. One of them's no peace that I've already talked about.
Yep.
Kaiser Fleet in Jutland, which Jim, for Jutland, I'm looking at the counters right now on their website. We'll have to let our friends Achilles and CT know that there are smoke markers.
Very, very good.
Yes.
So and perhaps it will be the ultimate juggling game.
Yes. Uh-huh. I'd be curious as, yeah, I want to dig into both Kaiser Fleet and Jutland and see really what the differences are between the two. But they are both World War One naval games. And then the fourth one that I was just reading here on is Lightning Strikes.
Yeah, I was going to bring that one up also. What is it that's grabbing you there?
I'm sorry?
I said I was going to bring that one up when it got around to me, but you beat me to it, so run with it. What's got you there?
It just looks like it's a 20th century run your nation from basically 1914 through for the next 40 years. Almost like a paradox game.
So, yeah, so here's what I'm going to say about that. And that's the only one I was going to say was Lightning Strikes. And the reason is it's the same designer that did Blitz World in Conflict, which is kind of a mini World in Flames game. So, yeah, this one, yeah, definitely going to keep an eye on it.
$129 on sale, on pre-order, $170.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's not going to be a small game. We're talking two mounted maps.
Yeah. No. I wasn't criticizing. I was just pointing out that this isn't your typical, you know, it's two to five players with a solitaire bot available.
And again, I'll toss the solitaire bot in the trash can and play it all five players myself.
Yeah. One of the things that catches me, that catches my interest on that one is, in terms of that level of scope, where it's a 40-year span across a pretty significant chunk of the 20th century, is it'll be interesting to see not only how they handle the military dimensions of the conflict, but the political dimensions and the fact that there were a lot of alliances that changed in a lot of directions over those 40 years. It'll also be interesting to see how they handle technological developments over that time and how they work those into the game. That is something that I'd be interested to see. I am curious why 1914 is the start point. I know that's like when World War One started, but given some of the political turmoil in the you know, 2 years or so immediately leading up to that, it'll be interesting to see sort of how that does it start with a historical World War One start, or are there possibilities of changing those start conditions slightly?
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting because you can play as the five major powers, right?
Yeah.
The Commonwealth, Germany, Japan, Russia, and the U.S. And then you can also play secondary of Austria and Austria-Hungary and China.
I mean, it says, it starts at the outbreak of war. So you're going to be starting, it sounds like, with the First World War. And the interesting thing to see in this is how are they going to handle the periods of time where there's no war, where there's not war? You know, what's that going to look like? That's very uncommon in a war game, right? There's no war.
Well, or does that war continue to drag, or does it wrap up early and then restart again later?
Or is it something like we see in Triumph and Tragedy, where you have a diplomacy phase where you're competing for through other means than army? Yeah.
Sort of altering the start conditions for the shooting, kind of. I'm very interested to see how that develops, is what I'll say. So, because it is a big grand scope. So that was, you know, you guys both grabbed the same one that I was thinking for something to be interested in. As we wrap up this page, across the bottom, OJ's dad, as you notice, like there's a couple of blocks here where we don't have games because we have other information in there. But NATO Oceans of Fire, Operation Crusader, Panzerkrieg, Pontiac's War, Prelude to Revolution, and Rome of Victrix. I will say we had Oceans of Fire on the table Sunday morning at Fall Assembly. We had a big, Mike, do you remember, was it three or four guys in the game? I think it was just three guys in the game, right?
I only saw three playing that one, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was just Jamie and Banzai Cat and Richard playing that one. But they were into it. I mean, they went for, you know, a full 4 or 5 hours and they were all pretty well engaged the entire time. It looked really cool. Again, naval game, not something I'm going to buy, but something I'd probably be talking to sitting down and play with somebody, especially now that I've actually seen it in action and sort of got a sense of what it looks like on the table and how that game might flow. Those guys seem pretty engaged in it all. That was pretty cool to see.
This isn't strictly a naval game, though. This is World War II Pacific is what this is.
Yes, but that means it's primarily a naval game.
Well, yes and no.
All right. Fair enough. Poke holes at me. That's fine. BB Mike, anything amongst that half dozen or so games that's jumping off the page at you?
Well, I already own Ocean of Fire, but I think Jim pointed out Pontiacs were, which I've completely forgotten about. I've seen it before, and that one is very intriguing to me. I mean, yeah. It's the time period I like, so, and it's a subject matter that is, you know, not that well covered.
It's got wooden cubes, man. It's clearly a Euro game.
How many games do I have with wooden cubes already? I wonder. Another podcast.
So I'm greater than zero. Jim, anything out of that that besides Pontiacs War, any notes or thoughts on any of those games?
No, I'd say that we've covered it.
All right, fair enough. OJ's dad?
No, nothing that I don't already have.
Yeah, I am interested to see how development proceeds on Panzerkrieg, because it was a John Prados design, and you know, he passed away earlier this year, and how development of that is going to be picked up and furthered. And look, folks are going to be respectful of John's legacy. The guy's been a titan in the wargaming world for a long time. It'll be interesting to see how that develops. This might be the last Prados game that we ever get, so that'll be interesting to see. Just because I don't think there's much left that Prados has that hadn't already been remade or is in print somewhere. As we flip over to the last page, I'm going to let OJ's dad lead here, because I'm sure Schutztruppe is right at the top of your list, right?
Yep, that's right there at the top of my list.
Right at the top of the page and at the top of your list.
Yep, so, Power in the State, possibly. It'd be kind of interesting. Stellar Horizons 2.
Okay. Did you played the first one?
No. Okay. I haven't.
It's just two catches your eye, huh?
Well, one had caught my eye before, too. I just had never actually pulled the trigger on it, so.
All right.
I think that's all I'm seeing on this page.
Yeah, for folks that don't know, one of the things that had caused such a delay in Schutztruppe is that the designer had passed away. And so development had to be picked up by somebody else, but they had to wait until somebody else was available to pick it up and run with it. Because, I mean, we've been talking about this for like 3 straight years now or so, right?
Yeah, something like that. 3, maybe 4.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I've had it on pre-order for that long.
Yeah, it's been a while that we've been talking about it in the catalog. And you know, I think one of those episodes is sort of some borderline frustration expressed, like, damn it, will you guys finally get around to release? But then we found out after the fact that, oh, yeah, by the way, that's because the designer had passed away, and that's what had caused the delay in that. And that makes it a little, you know, a lot more understandable as to why things are taking a little while. So,
yeah. And, you know, that was really more the criticism was it wasn't really put out. It was, if you weren't tracking this on a consistent basis, you didn't know that. Right.
Yeah.
Cause I think you finally pointed that out to me last year about this time. That's what the delay was. So this coming January, I will have had it on pre-order for 4 years.
Okay. Yeah. That's a little while there.
That's like 3 credit cards ago.
Yeah. Keep updating your info there. All right, Jim, anything on here that's grabbing your attention and shaking you awake?
Am I limited to just the top 2 lines? Is that where I'm at?
No. Anything on the page.
No. Ooh, okay. In that case, I've made my mark. Where did I circle that thing? I only circled it. I know for a fact I circled one.
Series 120?
Nope, the Troubles. The Troubles. There it is. That's why I couldn't see it. It was down here at the lower right. Obviously, an interesting topic. Not a traditional war game, and that's okay.
You're not one who's going to complain about that being a weirdo, huh?
Of course it's a weirdo, but so what? You know, and yes, let it be also crystal clear, victory at sea, baby.
Yeah, that I find it interesting that it's saying original 1992.
That really confuses me.
A remake of the original 1992 Jedco game. Didn't Jedco go under in like 72?
That's my recollection.
Okay. I'm hoping that's just like a repeated typo and that we didn't all miss Jedco's resurrection in the early 90s. I mean, I was in college and playing a lot of RPGs at the time, so it's entirely possible I could have missed their resurrection in the 90s, but I would like to think not. So
sure. No, it's by the way, Compass, I hope you're listening. Hire editors. There are typos on the back of the freaking box. I mean, that's just, what are you doing?
For what it's worth, my local news today had a graphic on the during the weather report talking about daylight savings time and talking about the difference in daylight from the 1st of November to the 31st of November.
Aha, good. But I mean, they spelled Kriegsmarine wrong.
Their spell check doesn't do German.
And they say it's a war game for beginners, apostrophe S.
Yeah, that just hurts my soul a little bit.
They capitalize grand strategy for reasons that evade me.
Because it's grand strategy.
No, it's grand strategy. You have to say both words.
Yeah, at that point, it's not even German capitalization of all the nouns, because grand isn't a noun at that point.
Yeah, no. Guys, pay people. You gotta pay people. Please pay people with an adept. That machine is no substitute yet. Just isn't. Victory at sea for sure.
BB Mike.
Starting at the top, let's see. Spanish American War. That looks interesting to me. Series 120 that I actually pre-ordered that, I think, probably more than a year
I guess
ago.
You'll find out in January.
The appeal there is kind of like what Jim was hinting at, you know, the quad games. Who doesn't love the quad games? And this kind of smacks of, you know, you got three separate games in a box, so that's kind of appealing. Sensui Khan, I also pre-ordered that, and that's an interesting game that has not yet appeared, and I think that's going to be one of those games that has more of an RPG feel to it.
Yeah.
There was one more, I think. Warriors of America, I'm just seeing for the first time. It's a Revolutionary War game, so I'll have to check that one out, but the price scares me, and I know nothing about it, so.
So that one's a new announcement. That's a relatively recent addition to the pre-order list. It is Starkweather. When, before the show had started, OJ's dad, when you were asking about the Doomsday Project stuff, that's also Starkweather. So it may be that he hit pause on Doomsday Project to go work on Warriors of America and then maybe coming back to Doomsday Project. I'm not really sure. But it's the same designer. And based on the sequencing, kind of the timeline of when that would have hit the pre-order pipeline, it's not a hard leap of faith to say that maybe that's what Starkweather's been working on instead of Doomsday Project. So,
and it says it's inspired by the well-received game Warriors of God. I have no idea what that is either.
It's a Crusades game. So it's okay. But it's probably a similar system.
There you go.
That may be what they're after there. So that would be my immediate assumption in all of that. So one of the things that jumped out at me, you mentioned Series 120, where it's the remake of three of the classic GDW games, and folks that are interested in what those Series 120 games are going to look like. The most recent issue of Paper Wars, issue 104, has a very deep dive into what the Series 120 stuff is going to look like. They've got a lot of the map graphics, counter graphics, bunch of rules information. So there's a very good look at what you're going to get in that Series 120 pack, which is pretty cool. What's interesting to me, I get that it's almost just a straight republishing with a little bit of errata cleanup of the three GDW games in that Series 120 from the late 80s, early 90s. It seems like, you know, go grab a designer and do a fourth one that wasn't originally published by GDW just so you got another quad game and you can say, hey, look, another quad. But that may just be my OCD kicking in that says, hey, you're supposed to do quad games if you're putting more than one in a box. So, BB Mike, Warriors of God was Starkweather and Makoto Nakajima back in, this was an M&P game back in 08.
Okay.
Looked it all up. So it's the Wars of England and France, 1135 to 1453. So it's 100 Years War. It's not the Crusades. So.
Which game was that?
That's Warriors of God, which the Warriors of America blurb says, based on that system.
Okay.
You know, and now I'm just noticing War in South Atlantic, and that also looks interesting.
Yeah, I was going to circle back around to that one.
That talk about an undercover topic. And then also for Jim's sake, look at Solitaire there. Best enjoyed by two. So they go out of their way to say, don't play this Solitaire.
Which, of course, you're looking at that going, challenge accepted.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, the ones that are kind of jumping off the page for me here, I mentioned the Series 120 thing. War in the South Atlantic is definitely one of them, because that the modern world there, again, it's funny where you're saying, you know, underserved topic, and I've got like a half a dozen games, maybe more, on Falkland stuff. I'm wondering if this isn't going to scratch the itch that Mrs. Thatcher's War just didn't do it for me.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The games you're talking about, there are games on the Falklands, but they tend to be much smaller games. I mean, this looks like a pretty good sized game.
Yeah. It could be. I'd be interested to see. It is a two mapper, so it'll be interesting to see. It says it's got two counter sheets in there. I would like to see it before making a decision one way or the other. But it looks like we got a year to wait, so there's some time there. I already have Third World War. One of these days I'll probably end up picking up the Doomsday Project games. I just hadn't yet, and part of the problem there was just a timing thing that they were hitting pre-order and then going to publication at a point in time where I just couldn't afford to go spend money on them. But those are the ones that are really jumping out at me there. I think Sea Power in the state would be interesting to see, to kind of watch other people do it. I'm not sure it's something that I would necessarily dig into playing, but I think I would really like to see it played and sort of see how it all works, to get a sense of it all. That would definitely be a place that would be something I'd be interested in. I don't know that we necessarily need to go through sort of, you know, every two rows in there, but has anybody got any last thoughts on kind of any of the ones in here that we didn't already mention as, hey, I'm personally interested in this, but sort of a, hey, that's kind of interesting to look at and kind of neat to see. Throw that out to any of y'all.
So. No, but we should read the payment information again because we always cover that.
Well, I
check your money order payment must be mailed along with this order form. Write your credit card number down on this form and mail it to us.
Oh, you can also use a check and a money order.
Fun of it, but Jim always does.
For the record, they stopped doing COD.
That's true.
Yes.
Which makes me sad.
And they don't take American Express.
I wasn't going to bring it up. I was not going to mention it, but it's still so dumb. People.
Oh, writing down your credit card number?
Do not write your credit card number down and mail it.
They do have a phone number here with a person's name that you can call and do it.
Fine, do that. I want you to buy from Compass. I do. They're a good company, but don't do that. Do you understand how many people steal mail? Do you know?
Well, and look, so Bill kind of chewed into me the first time we did this whole episode, and then he spent 2 hours yelling at me about, you know, how he's mad about what we talked about. I get all of that. One of Bill's arguments in this is that he's got some customers who are just not all that technically savvy, that are not comfortable getting online and doing all this computer stuff, and so they trust the U.S. Postal Service more than they trust websites online. And fine, we can make fun of those guys later. I will say this though: if you are intellectually, you know, mentally capable of figuring out the special deal of if your merchandise is more than $3.99, take $30 off. Not available online. U.S. shipping, 14 for first game, 6 for each additional game. Canada shipping, international shipping, sales tax, 6.35%, Connecticut customers only. Total payment, do all the math. At this point, I'm filling out your tax paperwork for you. If you can handle that level of mathematical calculation, you can type in compassgames.com and go fill out your credit card online.
All you have to do is call Carolyn Thomas.
Yes, yes, there's that is the
call
option.
Call Carolyn Thomas. I think that will be fine.
If people start calling her just to ask her if she will really take their credit card orders, she's going to hunt us down individually.
Do you really write down credit card information? And to top it all off, and can we say, not that this isn't known or it's some big secret, but it is something that people comment about on the regular, and I think why wouldn't it affect our hobby like any other? My God, the rates for international shipping.
Yeah.
$50 for the first game. And I'm not saying that that's not a scam, that's not a con, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's Compass can't do anything about that. You can make fun of Compass all you want, but that one's outside their control.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
and not a damn thing they can do about it.
But you got to feel, I mean, we got a lot of people that watch the channel from Australia, from New Zealand, from Great Britain.
Yep.
And, you know, you take a game, just gosh, I'll grab one that we were all interested in. There we go. The Troubles, right? This game is $85. If you're shipping it to Ireland, ironically enough, it's going to be $135.
Yeah.
That is going to keep a lot of people from buying into our hobby. And I see no immediate easy answer to that.
Well, I'll tell you, at a certain point,
Go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, and that doesn't even count currency conversions, right?
Good point.
That's American dollars. So whatever the euro exchange rates are.
So it would be interesting to do the math. And maybe this is a science project somebody needs to do to write an article for the website. It would be interesting to do the math that based on that international shipping, what did we say it was? $49 for one game, for the first game?
Yep.
Is that what it is? $49 yep. for the first game. So assuming we've got 20 people all ordering a game from the greater London area, right? 20 people times 50 games is a plane ticket, right?
Yep.
A whole bunch of folks need to pool their money, put Nigel on a plane from London to Compass Expo, where all those games are 50% off anyway, send him with a backpack that's got a change of underwear in it and two empty duffel bags, right? And you know, for the $1,000 round trip and two nights in a hotel, he's buying all the games at 50% off and there's no shipping cost to bring them home. And at that point, yeah, are you a game smuggler? Not technically, because whatever's in your carry-on you're allowed to bring, as long as it's not like drugs and alcohol. You're not smuggling games. You can bring those back. Folks need to just sort of collectively pool the money for someone flying over from over. And actually, I think one of the dudes, maybe it's Second Chance Games, maybe it's Limey Yank. One of those guys from England flies to CSW Expo every year with two empty suitcases. And that's exactly what he does. He loads up on games from publishers there, takes two suitcases full of games home with him, and then that's how he kind of restocks the store with some stuff that's tougher to get through customs. So like all the stuff from Hollandspiel, as a for instance, like he's gonna bring all that stuff back because it doubles the price of the game to ship it. Somewhere in there somebody's gonna figure out, hey, you know, maybe it's our buddy over in England whose wife is in Maryland, right? Maybe he starts funding his trips to visit his wife by covering shipping costs for people to bring suitcases of games back to England with him. So maybe that's just what we need to do. Pump House. I Dave was in my mind. I couldn't think of his last name. So because isn't his wife still in Maryland?
They keep going back and forth. Yeah, she's in Maryland, but she visits. They stay, they are what is it, bicontinental?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, can you imagine? The dude would have a thriving business simply by hauling a suitcase full of games each way. You know, anytime somebody goes from the U.S. towards England, whether it's his wife or whether it's him, load up a rolling bag, you know, get an extra hard side, load it up with, you know, $1,000 worth of games and save everybody their shipping costs. You could still bump the price $10 each over there, make a spare, you know, $100-$150 or whatever, save everybody shipping costs. Presto, games.
We're going to start stealing those little mini subs that the drug dealers use, and then we're going to
sell
games and we're going to ship them over to Europe.
You and Vance both together, you're both retired, right? So you guys have nothing better to do.
You guys could totally be game mules. You start a new business, the game mules, right?
Yeah, exactly. I like that. No,
but seriously, I mean, you could fit 20 box games in a good sized hard side suitcase that you're going to check through baggage anyway. For the cost of shipping 20 Compass games, that's a round trip ticket from the East Coast to Heathrow. And you could just haul a bunch of games. You know, you get everybody else to pitch in instead of $50 to ship it to you, I'll only charge you 30. You get 30 people, you know, 20, 30 people pitch into that, and they just paid for your plane ticket for you to go back and forth. All you got to do is, you know, just show up and drop off some games somewhere. And in the meantime, you get a free flight to and from England because those guys paid you to fly instead of paying shipping costs to Uncle Sam and the Crown and whoever else. And you don't have to go through customs because you're just carrying it on yourself. I'm sure we're all about to get convicted of criminal conspiracy here. But
I was just thinking, though, if Mike and Vance were taking that sub across the Atlantic and the Coast Guard caught them, they just let them go because nobody would want to be embarrassed about writing up that. No Coast Guard officer would ever write up that report.
But here's the ridiculous part of that, Mike, is the shipping cost from the U.S., to Canada or the UK is absurd, but the shipping cost from Canada to the UK probably isn't. Like, buy a bunch of those games, send them to you know, Buffalo, New York, drive across the border to Niagara Falls, mail them from the Canadian post office there. What, you know, it'd be interesting to know from Vance what it costs to mail a game from Ottawa over to, you know, Bob in Newcastle. What does that cost? Because
That was Brant Guillory of the Armchair Dragoons.
His email address is
like I'm hard to find out there or something. The Brant Guillory that works for the airline in Chicago is about to get arrested for this. So no, but seriously, I mean, there's I get that it's a governmental action issue, and that you know, international shipping is what it is, and there's not much we can do about it. But it seems like, you know, we've joked about the old, you know, looking for a ride to conventions ads that you used to see in magazines. Somebody could probably start a site online somewhere looking for someone to bring me some games from the U.S. And, you know, if you've got a flight coming to England, hey, I'm willing to, you know, if you can, I'm going to buy these three games from Compass, have them shipped to your house. When you get here, I'm going to, you know, I'll give you $50 for delivering all three of them to me or whatever it is. And, you know, when the cost of shipping those things is absurd, not because of the actual transportation cost, but because of the governmental inefficiency cost, it's not a surprise that people are going to want to try and find a way around.
Once again, you've been listening to the voice of Brant Guillory of the Armchair.
This has been Brant Guillory.
You guys are insistent on getting me arrested. Aren't you? Organize your own damn Origins events next year, then. Because I'll be in the clink somewhere.
There's an Origins next year?
Not for you.
Oh, okay. I'm
so with you, man. You got to be there. I got a whole table set aside for you. That way you can leave Space Empires 4X set up the entire time.
Ooh.
See?
Space Empires 4X, the mega game.
All right, guys, this year's Compass catalog on the whole. OJ's dad, what do you think?
It's good.
It's good. Is that like a 3.5 stars out of five? Is that a
4.5
out of five?
Yeah, 4.5.
4.5?
Yep.
All right. So of the stuff that's here in the cat, so talking the product in the catalog, not talking, you know, garish colors or typos or layout or any of that stuff. What are they missing that you would like to see more of in the future? What's something that would cause you to open your wallet up a little bit more for them in the future? Besides actually getting Schutztruppe to you.
Yeah, well, I've already paid for it, so my wallet's already been open for that. So I don't know if niche is quite the right word, but, you know, like the no-peace games, you know, things that I mean, we're looking at this, right? And we have three different World War One games. We have how many Cold War goes hot. We have how many World War Two, a few Napoleonic games. To me, it's the things that we don't talk about very much.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We tend to treat some of those eras between the big wars as kind of voids, when in fact there was a lot of shooting going on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I mentioned, you know, World War One. You know, we've got how many of them here? Now, I will say, like, Jutland and Kaiser Fleet are at least more naval and not just the same rehash of let's refight the whole war type games, like Imperial Tide and Death in the Trenches and whatever else is there. Lightning Strikes, you know, right there is a prime example. Lightning Strikes, it's just something totally different. So like I said, it's a Paradox game on the tabletop.
Yeah.
And to me, that's unique. It's at least something I'm going to take a second and a third look at. For quite a while.
For something different.
Yeah, you know, me personally, looking at, you know, Operation Crusader, I'm going to go right past it. That's just not something I'm interested in, and it's been rehashed how many times in the last 50, 60 years?
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense. Makes sense.
I do think Death in the Trenches is a little different. I mean, it has potential to go completely off the rails. There's a lot of randomness in there.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm not criticizing it. I was just meaning, you know, I'm just looking for things that are going to stick out a lot more, more niche and things that aren't visited very often.
Yeah.
I realize, though, on the other hand, that that's probably hard for the publishers to do because not as many people are going to maybe gravitate to those.
Yeah. Yeah. East Front World War II pays the bills. Right, you could start a war game publishing company that did nothing but East Front World War II and never run out of paying customers. That's a reality of the hobby. You know, good or bad, you could do that forever. Look, Zucker's made a living out of doing nothing but Napoleon. To Jim's eternal gratitude.
Sure, you're not making some sort of point.
Am I ever making a point?
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. All right. So, Jim, overall Compass catalog, what are we thinking?
Smaller than years past, slighter. I'd be fascinated to know the economics. I'd be fascinated to be called a dirty liar or somebody who doesn't understand the business. It felt lighter to me. Fewer offerings, certainly fewer new offerings. That said, they are, to me, more committed to the traditional war game space than GMT is these days, and I'm grateful for that. And they have quite a few things that are of great interest, and I hope they get to market in a successful way. I still think they have quality control problems. I see them in the games that they're offering right in this catalog. And I hope they can overcome those and bring to market some, like I say, some games about which I'm pretty excited.
All right. BB Mike, what do we think overall?
I think it's a great catalog. I think this year it seemed a little different to me. And part of it might be what Jim said, and that maybe there's fewer games listed. That could be it. But it just seems like the organization, it seems more organized. And I'd have to go back and grab a previous catalog, but it just looks like things are more laid out, more in straight lines than in previous years. There's some organization here.
Yeah,
I think the colors are better. It's just easier to read for some reason.
I think it's also a great testament to them that they have created a document in this catalog that we morons keep year to year.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, I mean, that's by itself, and we've commented on this in the past. No matter what you think about the games, no matter what you think about the content, no matter what you think about any of the stuff that I've been grousing about, it's an amazing thing that they still do. And should they ever stop, I would be very sad.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and not just because we'd lose a podcast episode every year, but because we enjoy going through the catalog, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you could go to GMT has become the past masters of the everybody waits with bated breath for the GMT monthly update, right?
Which you always know. Seems to drop at 2:45 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Well, you know, Jim, it's funny that you said that because the last one that came out was last week.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I've looked at it in probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it I think aesthetically, and at least for me, I'll just speak for myself, it gets lost in the miasma of email.
Yeah.
Because we get a lot. I mean, I subscribe to any number of game company newsletters and I'm glad to have them. And if they're a company that I'm regular with, I go there. I'll confess it. With GMTs, I do one thing and one thing only. Have they promoted Commands and Colors Napoleonics past the spot where it was before?
You know, whereas perpetual no.
It's an eternal cycle of no. Now that I've outlived Matthew Perry, I'm getting really concerned. But it really does speak to how this catalog, the Compass catalog, you sit back with it, you open it up. We're old. Well, you know, yeah, we're old. Well, Brent, you're a kid, but you know, we're all old guys.
I'm on the north side of 50. You realize that, right?
Yeah, I do. And it, you know, we sit down. I just pushed over, you know, I'm 57 now. That's a weird age. But it, you know, I sit back and I open it up and I feel like the old school newspaper and it's a joy, you know?
Yeah.
And I pay much closer attention to it, which probably leads me to criticize it more than I would with GMT just because I don't care.
I just realized I'm the same age as Jim. We've been yelling at the same cloud all along.
Huzzah! Cloud yelling. Except you got to retire. Well done.
Yeah, well.
He's paid for it.
I don't doubt that for a minute.
So first of all, Jim, you're right. I you know, to be very clear, I hope Compass never stops sending us paper catalogs. For those of us of a certain generation, and I admit that we're all getting further up there in age, this is the closest we're ever going to get to the Christmas wish book showing up in the mailbox.
Of course.
It would be much cooler if more war game companies did this. Any sort of paper catalog, would enjoy the hell out of having a paper catalog from folks. It's interesting. When Tabletop Tycoon bought Victory Point and immediately shed most of the war game stuff, a lot of us quit paying attention to Tabletop Tycoon, except that they republished a couple of the States of Siege games. So I reached out to them and you know, was able to get copies of Ottoman Sunset and Habsburg Eclipse, and that's what's on the table. And then I also bought a copy of the Cuba game, Splendid Little War. These came with a small paper catalog in them from Tabletop Tycoon. That's not all war game stuff, but it's still cool to have a paper catalog from somebody. These are neat things. And I've actually, you know, cleaned up some shelves in here and kind of digging around a little bit. I found a couple of older Compass catalogs from before they printed them as the giant map foldout, from back when they were still smaller little booklets, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, whatever it was. These are still kind of cool things to look through. And I appreciate the companies that still do this. I wish more of them would do it. I get that it may not turn out to be much of an economic driver for many of the folks over the long haul. And so, you know, if it's something that's going to cause you to lose business, then don't do it, because that's dumb. Let's keep as many war game companies in business for as long as possible. But the paper catalogs are a great bit of fan service that I think, you know, again, those of us, you know, and the 40 and over demographic really appreciate, because it is something tangible, kind of a touchstone to something that we all grew up with that was really cool and that we really enjoyed. And I would hate to ever see that go.
Yeah, I still think it's neat when you open up an old, say, Avalon Hill game and there's a catalog in there. I mean, I'm excited to see that. I'll sit there and flip through it. Even though it was 1970, whatever, I'm going to look through it and think it's cool.
Yeah, and look, we've all been tempted to fill out one of those registration cards from a GDW game from 1991, right? Just to see what would happen if we mailed it in, and you know,
Tim out. I when I opened up my copy of Gordon at Khartoum, there was a Lou Zachi Game Science die inside it, a 10 sider, and a card to register my die.
Ooh,
I did.
What came back?
Nothing. No. Did you write? I was so curious as to know, because it warranted my die.
You were supposed to write your credit card number on there. That's the only way you're going to get that warranty.
Had you written your credit card number, Lou would have gotten a hold of you.
Yeah. All that said, you know, when I put on my look, I've done graphic design in my life. I've taught graphic design in my life at the college level, no less. Like, people took graphic design classes with me and went out and got a job in graphic design somehow. And probably far exceeded my limited abilities in the field. And that's totally fine. That's what, you know, students should do from their professors. So that's totally cool. Compass has got to go get somebody some additional graphic design lessons or a real graphic designer. As awesome as the information in here is, I still get distracted at odd hyphenations, at inconsistent sizing and control of fonts, of the random bold here and there. They are getting better. There are improvements every year in terms of consistency and color and layout. But every year there's a half a dozen things in here that if a student had, you know, turned that into me, I'd have put a big red circle around it, told him to go fix it. But again, I think part of that goes back to what Jim was saying earlier. Like, because we have this paper thing in our hands, we're looking at it in great detail, and that's where we find some of those flaws. And that if we never had it in our hands, no, we wouldn't ever see those flaws. But our lives would be much poorer for not having them at all. And so I don't want it to be one of those things where everybody kind of throws their hands up and says, well, fine, if we can't do it where you're happy, we'll just stop doing it. No, don't do that. Like, keep doing it and keep striving to be better every year, because it's a very cool thing that we love being able to go through and ooh and ah and ogle. And, you know, look, you're going to find stuff in there that you didn't know existed. And that's kind of cool to know about. Maybe you see something in there, you go, damn it, I want that. But if nothing else, like, you now know this full scope of things that are available out there, that if somebody else is saying, hey, does anybody know if there's a game about blah, blah, or blah, yeah, I saw this in the Compass catalog, you should go check it out. So totally worth sending out catalogs just for that.
Don't take the critiques as a criticism. Take them as a, hey, here's something you can do to maybe improve the layout, the presentation.
Yeah, we share because we care.
There you go.
So. Frankly, I think somebody said it earlier that it's getting better. They're just,
oh yeah,
they're just little things, right? Like Barbarians at the Gate, back in stock in February 2014, but unfortunately the bubble they put that in just blends back in with the block. It doesn't snap out at you, right? You know, yeah. It's a little thing. But it's those little things that add up over time.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Look, if there is a 3% improvement year over year, then after 5 years, your catalog's 15% better. And that's good. Like, mm-hmm. That is a noticeable improvement. And that's what you should always strive for. And that should be true, not just of the catalog, but of all the products. So. Gents, I think we've run out of catalog to talk about. I don't know if there's any other Compass-ish stuff we choose to talk about or not, but I think we've covered quite a bit of ground tonight. And look, there's a couple of things in here I'm probably going to end up spending some money on. Although I will say I am tempted to see how much space Gary has in his suitcase and just like PayPal him the money and let him grab all the stuff I want at 50% off at the Compass Expo when he goes here in a week or two and just pick it up for him next time I'm in Ohio.
There you go.
That was Brant Guillory of the Armchair Dragoons.
Dude, it's not illegal to take games from Connecticut to Ohio.
Trying to get games across state lines.
We're not smuggling beer to Atlanta.
A violation of the Mann Act.
Yeah. Transporting games across state lines for the purposes of, you know.
For immoral purposes.
For immoral purposes. All right, cool. Yeah. Mike, Jim, thank you guys all very much for joining us here to talk about the Compass Catalog audience. I hope that we've helped you spend a whole lot of money and that your online shopping carts, please let them be online shopping carts and not written on the form on the catalog.
Don't do it.
Online shopping carts are bursting at the seams and that your significant others freak out about how much money you spent thanks to us pointing out all kinds of cool stuff in the catalog for you. I really hope that's the case. And if your significant others get mad, direct all the complaints to BB Mike. So he's got a
YouTube. Yeah, I'm used to it.
Leave all sorts of comments on and that'd be totally fine. But seriously, we are winding down on this season of Mentioned and Dispatched. We got about a half dozen episodes left. Not even a half dozen episodes left. We've got a handful of them left. Before we get to the holidays, we take our break going into the spring. If you get a chance, swing over to iTunes and just give us some sort of rating. If you only think we're worth 2 stars, fine. Throw 2 stars at it. If you think we're worth 5, we love you. Please throw that at us. We just need some more ratings overall in order to start showing up in the recommendation engines that drive those podcast recommendations, where it's the whole, if you like this, you should also check out these other things. It just helps us gain some visibility if you do that. And so we'd appreciate if you take time to do that. Otherwise, you know, swing by the site, jump in the forums. We've always got all kinds of chatter about these games and others going on there. Don't forget to tune into Saturday Night Fights. Always Jim, usually OJ, occasionally, you know, me showing up in the comments just because I'm at work on Saturdays. Jim, it's Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday now is the streaming schedule, right?
Correct.
Is that what's usually on?
Just so.
All right. And that's over on Jim's YouTube channel. And then if you want to watch playthroughs of some full games end to end where Schizophrenic Mike is doing the solo multi-handed thing, My Own Worst Enemy, when you go looking for it in YouTube, it's My Own Worst Enemy Wargaming. Otherwise, you're going to get the first 50 listings will be the song by Lit. that's what's going to show up if you go looking for My Own Worst Enemy there. Lots of different ways you can engage with the Dragoons and check out the content that we've got flying around. We hope to have you back for another podcast down the line. And gentlemen, thanks for being here. Audience, thanks for listening. We'll catch you another time on another episode of Mentioned and Dispatches.